All of us know that chametz is also an allusion to the Yetzer Hara. And when you get rid of your chametz, we are supposed to get rid of or work on eradicating the Yetzer Hara. In fact, they tell a beautiful story about a great Hasidic Rebbe who spent hours and hours with his Talmidim looking for chametz. And the Talmidim were very happy with themselves because they really felt they did a thorough job. But at the end, the Rebbe started crying, and the Rebbe pointed to his heart, and he said, I got rid of all the chametz there, but who's going to look for the chametz in here? But his Talmidim had a wonderful answer. The Mishnah says, any place that you don't bring in chametz doesn't have to be checked. So they told the Rebbe, your heart is a place that no chametz ever comes in. Well, that may be true in some cases. For most of us, we do have a little bit of work to do. And in fact, for many years, I'm not sure if it's still the case, the largest Seder in the world is in Kathmandu. Chabad has a Seder for all of the Israelis that happen to be in Nepal and other people, etc. So it's like more than 2,000 people come to the Seder without a microphone, without a public address system. And obviously, a few of the people might be religious, but the vast majority are not really dati in the traditional way we understand it. So they do things a little avant-garde. So Erev Pesach, when they burn the chametz, so the minog in Kathmandu, if any of you is ever going to go there, is you write on a piece of paper some bad midah that you would like to improve on, and you throw it into the fire with the chametz. Now, you can look at that and say, oh, avant-garde, hippie-ish, you know, that's not halacha. On the other hand, it actually ties in very strongly with the Kabbalistic meaning of searching for chametz that we also... Didn't hear, Zain? I think it's Chabad, yeah. I'm not sure if Chabad started the custom or the people just did it spontaneously, but Chabad runs the Kathmandu Seder. Yes, it was. I don't know if it's current, but it was like considered the largest Seder in the world, Kathmandu, right? One of the highest places in the world. Now, spiritually, of course, Eretz Yisrael gavoa mikol haaretzot. There's no question about that. But in terms of topography, you know, Mount Everest, all that stuff, Kathmandu is probably the geographically highest Seder in the world. So the topic I'm going to talk about is kind of a halachic topic, but it will have some interesting hashgafic implications. And I want to start off with the idea that everybody knows that maybe the most prominent mitzvah of Pesach generally is that we eat matzah and we don't eat chametz, right? I already spoke a little bit about what that means. But if we ask ourselves, why is there an obligation to eat matzah the first night of Pesach? The rest of Pesach, there's actually no obligation. You're not allowed to eat chametz, but you don't have to eat matzah. If you want to live on potatoes for Pesach, you're allowed to. The only time there's an absolute obligation to eat matzah is Leil Seder. Be'erev, the night of Pesach, tochlu matzos, you must eat matzah. That's why, for example, the matzah has special laws. It has to be shmura, it has to be watched for the purpose of the matzah mitzvah. That doesn't apply to the rest of Pesach, because the rest of Pesach, it is simply, you're not allowed to have chametz. It is only the first night of Pesach, and in Chutz La'aretz, the first two nights, where you're mechuyav to eat matzah. But if we ask ourselves, why is there a chiyav to eat matzah? The Haggadah itself gives two contradictory answers. The beginning of the Haggadah, which is the only paragraph in Aramaic, not in Hebrew, talks about Hal Lachma Anya Diachalu Afasana Biara de Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction which our forefathers ate in Egypt. Lachma Anya is simply Aramaic for the Torah's own designation of matzah as Lechem Oni, the bread of poverty, the bread of affliction. Now, why is matzah called Lechem Oni? The answer was that this was the food that used to be given to slaves. The Eben Ezra writes, the Eben Ezra was actually a world traveler, and he says he visited India once, and the Maharajis would give their slaves matzah, because matzah stays in the stomach, as we know, a very long time, and therefore you don't have to eat a lot. If I want to save on things, I give my slaves matzah, and they don't have to eat for a very long time. So seen in this way, matzah is a commemoration of slavery. We remember, just like mora, right? Bitter herbs certainly remind us of slavery. Chol lachma anya assigns a very similar role to matzah, that matzah is the bread of affliction, the bread of slavery. So that is reason number one. Now, if you go further on in the Haggadah, towards the end of Maggid, we have the statement of Rabban Gamliel, a very important statement, that anyone that does not explain three commandments has not fulfilled his mitzvah of Haggadah, and those three commandments are the reason why we eat the Korban Pesach, when we had the Korban Pesach, the reason why we eat matzah, and the reason why we eat maror. By the way, a little ha'ara that may be especially relevant for the women, this is actually the most important part of the Haggadah. Now, it's important for people to realize that because this is shortly before the meal, what often happens is that the people who are serving, now it doesn't have to be women, it could be men too, but realistically speaking, no reason why not, but realistically speaking, it tends to be the women. You might get up and go into the kitchen, bedafka, during the recitation of those paragraphs. Got to be very, very careful, because if you miss those paragraphs, you're not yotzei the whole Haggadah. So you have to be sure that you either recite them ahead of time. I mean, you can go ahead if you have to, whether English, Hebrew, whatever your language is, or if you do it after they said it, you go back and you say it. You cannot skip it. There are parts of the Haggadah which if you skip or you missed, they don't affect being yotze. If you miss the four sons, for example, though that's a very beloved part of the Maggid, you are 100% yotze, the mitzvah of talking about the Exodus, even if you skip the Arba Banim. But if you skip the Rabban Gamliel paragraphs, you are not yotze. So be very, very careful to get those in, as they say, in any language that you understand. Now, the reason for matzah that Rabban Gamliel gives is a totally different reason. There was no time for our forefathers to let their dough rise, that they were baking bread the morning of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and it takes a little bit of time for the dough to rise, at least 18 minutes before you bake it. And either the Egyptians or HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you have to leave this minute. We didn't have time to let our dough rise. The way the Arizal explains, we were on the 49th level of impurity. Had we stayed another minute, whatever that means, we would have hit 50. And when you hit 50th level, you're irredeemable. So whether it was the Egyptians kicking us out, or whether it was Hashem saying, you must leave right now. As a result, we baked our dough as matzah because we didn't have time to let our dough rise. Now you understand, this is a direct contradiction to hal lachma anya, because according to the first reason that is given for matzah, matzah is a commemoration of the bread that we ate when we were slaves, and it reminds us of servitude, avdut, poverty, affliction. According to the second reason that's given for matzah, matzah is a reminder of the miraculous redemption from Mitzrayim that took place so quickly, chipazon, quickly, that we didn't have time to let our dough rise. Whether you understand it as the Egyptians kicking us out or Hashem said, you have to leave this very second. So according to that, matzah commemorates Geula. You understand, in the Seder of Pesach, there are contradictory symbols. There are symbols of slavery and symbols of freedom. Maror, for example, is clearly a symbol of slavery. The four cups of wine is a celebration of freedom, right? Freedom, slavery. Reclining, Although the way we recline today, it's kind of slavery in and of itself, kind of uncomfortable. But the real reclining, if you really do it right, it's like Cleopatra, those Roman banquets, you're on a couch and the servant is dropping a grape in your mouth, right? That's what reclining is supposed to be like, really. That's freedom. What is matzah? Matzah is a composite symbol. Matzah is both lechem oni, and matzah is the lechem of geula and chipazon, and this is bracketed by the beginning of the Haggadah, Magid, and the end of the Magid, in which the matzah has these double symbols. So that's one thing to keep in mind. And in fact, the Ramban and Chumash actually says, Beferish, that these two reasons for matzah are merumaz in the Torah itself, because the Torah says, you shall eat matzah lechem oni, ki b'chipazon yatsasa me'yaretz Mitzrayim. This is a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. So look what the Torah is saying. Eat matzah, which is the bread of affliction, because you were taken out of Mitzrayim in a rush. The Ramban says, chipazon is not an explanation of lechem oni. Rather, it's as if there's a vav. You should eat it lechem oni, va, ki b'chipazon yatsasa Mitzrayim. It is two different reasons for matzah, and the Haggadah is actually tracking what that pasuk itself says. Now, I will throw out a kasha. I haven't decided if I want to answer it yet. I'll make that decision in around a minute after I say the question, but because it's a complicated, very complicated answer. So I'll have to decide whether I want to go into that, but let me just throw out the question, because it is a very good question. If you look in the Torah, when the Jews were commanded to eat matzah at the Seder, it actually was all the way back Rosh Chodesh Nisan. In fact, that was the Torah reading we read yesterday, Parshas HaChodesh. They were commanded not to eat chametz and to eat matzah the first night of Pesach. Now the question becomes, how can you possibly say that the reason we are commanded to eat matzah is because we left Mitzrayim b'chipazon, if at the time we were given the commandment of matzah, that event didn't even happen yet. And they had a Seder, meaning the first Seder, the first Pesach in Mitzrayim, they ate matzah. So, if you had a little kid who's asking Abba, Abba, why are we eating matzah tonight? What's Abba going to say? Because tomorrow morning we're not going to have time to let our dough rise, so to commemorate the chipazon, therefore we were eating matzah. But that didn't happen yet, and they didn't know it wouldn't. First of all, if they knew it would happen, then they wouldn't be in a rush. They knew, they would have known they have to bake it matzah. So that's a very, very difficult question. And that is, how can the mitzvah of matzah be based on chipazon, since the commandment number one was given earlier, and number two, not only was the commandment given earlier, it was actually observed earlier before the event. That would suggest, therefore, and this is going to be very, very important to keep this in mind, that the first time they ate matzah, it was only because of lechem oni. Meaning to say, the only reason that applied at the first Seder was the remembrance of the slavery, that even though you're going out, remember what it's like to be a slave. That's extremely important, because that's why we're grateful to Hashem, because we remember the slavery. The chipazon was nitchadesh as a tam only mikan ulahaba, only for future years, and not for the very first year. In other words, the first Seder, matzah had one reason, only. Only the future Sedarim, it acquires an additional reason. Chipazon is nitchadesh, mikan ulahaba, for all of the future years. And so that's a little bit of background. Again, there are more complications here, and that is, if they already were commanded not to have chametz, then even without chipazon, they couldn't make chametz. I mean, the implication of the Torah is, had they had time, they would have made bread. What do you mean? They weren't allowed to have bread. Okay, that's another question, something to think about, something you can discuss at the Seder, and see the different opinions there. But now I want to segue into an interesting halacha. Lechem oni is translated as the bread of affliction, the bread of poverty, the bread of servitude, because it is what our forefathers ate as slaves in Egypt. But the Gemara has an interesting halacha that's based on lechem oni. And it says, what if you have the product that is commercially known as egg matzah? Technically, the Gemara describes, instead of making matzah with flour and water, you make matzah with egg yolk, with fruit juice, with honey, with wine, with shemen. So the Gemara says, Beferesh, you cannot fulfill your Seder obligation by eating such matzah. Reason? Because the Torah requires that matzah be lechem oni, but matzah that is kneaded with egg yolk, fruit juice, wine, chocolate, or oil is called matzah ashira. It's called rich man's matzah, not poor man's matzah. Matzah got to be the bread of poverty, not the bread of luxury. And therefore, it is a davar pashut ma'od, and this is lahalacha, there's no machlokas whatsoever on this, that one cannot be yotzei the mitzvah of matzah with matzah ashira. And under no circumstances, no matter what the hechsher is, matzah ashira is not kosher for the Seder. Now, that's what I'm going to talk about. Now, so the question becomes, okay, it's not kosher for the Seder, but can I eat it during Pesach? Can I eat it Erev Pesach? So here we get into, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. So the Torah records that. Yeah, the question is, for the 40 years in the desert, did the Jewish people celebrate Pesach? It is recorded explicitly in the Torah that the first Pesach after they left, the first Pesach in the desert, which is, you know, after Matan Torah, they absolutely celebrated, and they brought the Korban Pesach. And if you remember, there were people who were impure, and they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach, and that's when they were given the chance to bring it a month later. Now, the remaining years, which is already after the spies, the Gemara recounts they did not bring the Korban Pesach because they were not circumcised. Children that were born in the desert were not circumcised, but they did observe the commandments of matzah and Haggadah. So they did keep Pesach for the 40 years in the desert, except for the Korban Pesach, which they only did once. And then they reinstituted it in the time of Yehoshua ben Nun when they crossed the Yarden. So, So the Gemara says the following. After the sin of the spies, the Jewish people had less divine protection from God, so to speak, although Hashem still protected them, and therefore it was treated as a sakana to circumcise while they were traveling in the desert. Again, if you look in the Yehoshua ben Nun, you say for Yehoshua, you actually read that there was a mass circumcision in the days of Yehoshua. Ki mulim hayu kalam ayotzim. All the people who left Mitzrayim were circumcised, and all the children born in the desert were not circumcised. And you cannot bring the Korban Pesach if you're not circumcised, and you cannot bring the Korban Pesach if your children are not circumcised. So as a result, they were disabled from bringing the Korban Pesach. Huh? Well, it's mashma that if it was a sakana, then presumably even Shevet Levi did it. Huh? No, that was before. That was still in Mitzrayim. Yeah. Yeah. No, but that was a different thing because Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu should have understood that because he was given a direct shlichus from Hashem, Hashem would protect him. That wouldn't apply to the rest of the people. So for sure, the one thing we know for sure, let's start with what we know for sure, is what is called egg matzah or matzah ashira, and that includes wine, chocolate, oil, whatever different flavorings they put in. Not kosher for Seder. What about, I want to eat it just generally. So here we have a big, big argument between the Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles. And as you know, Rav Yosef Karo, who's called the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, he is the source of halacha for Sfardim, by and large. There are exceptions, but I'm generalizing. And Rav Moshe Isserles, who lived really the same generation, he was a little younger than Rav Yosef Karo, Ramah, he's abbreviated, Ramah. Those of you, if any of you ever traveled to Poland, in Krakow, there is still the base Knesset. The Rav was the Rav of Krakow, and there's still the base Knesset of the Ramah. And that's such a holy place that even when Hasidim go into the Ramah's shul, Hasidim daven Nusach Sfarad, in the Ramah's shul they daven Ashkenaz, they say. In the Ramah's shul, we got to follow the Ramah's minhagim. The Ramah died at only 42. He died very young man, and yet he is considered to be the phenomenally great posek of Ashkenazim. Sfardim, take it pretty clear and simple. Egg matzah is a chisaron because it's not lechem oni, but it's 100% kosher lePesach. You want to eat it, you want to enjoy it, you want to serve it as a dessert, perfectly fine. As long as you're not using it to be yotzei, the mitzvah of the Seder. So thus, you will see many products sold in stores with Sfardic hashgacha, and it's not because of kitnius. Kitnius is another Ashkenazic Sfardic difference, but I am not talking about kitnius. I'm talking about matzah ashira, and matzah ashira is commonly sold with Sfardic hashgachas for Pesach. Yeah. So that is an interesting question. Sfardim actually would not, but Ashkenazim theoretically, if they're using it, now again, if it tends to be a cookie or cake type of thing, then you wouldn't. But if it's like egg matzah, then if you're using it to make your meal, you would actually make hamotzi over it. Even during the year. Now, here is the thing. The Ramah brings a chumrah. The Ramah brings a chumrah b'medinos ha'elu. In our countries refer to Poland, Russia, Germany, and by extension, people who are descendants of people from those countries called Ashkenazim, right? You've heard of Ashkenazim. B'medinos ha'elu, our minog is we do not eat matzah ashira at all during Pesach, because of the following concern. The concern is that we know that generally water and flour takes 18 minutes till it becomes chametz. And that's why if you bake it before 18 minutes, you're fine. But there is a view that when you add what are called mei peirot, wine, fruit juice, anything else, perhaps there is a chashash that the fermentation process is accelerated. So it is a chashash. A chashash means a worry, a concern that egg matzah might be chametz. Now here's the funny thing about it. Even though there's a concern that it might be chametz, this concern only extends to eating and not keeping in the house, because we're less strict on keeping than on eating. And the Ramah says, we do allow its consumption to people who have difficulty eating regular matzah, such as a chole, a sick person, a zaken, an old person, a child. Now again, I want to be very clear. To be yotzei the Seder, you could be old, you could be sick, you're not yotzei with egg matzah. If you can't eat regular matzah, you grind up matzah meal, and you take spoons of matzah meal, even with water, that would be okay, unless you have shiruya, which is another thing, gebrucht, and the like, right? It's always one thing or another, but okay. So again, please be sure you understand this. The dispensation that the Ramah gives for chole, zaken, or katan is not referring to the mitzvah of matzah b'leil seder. It's referring to the permissibility of eating matzah ashira generally. Now, not all Ashkenazic poskim agreed with the Rama, even Ashkenazic poskim. The Maral of Prague, was actually a little older than the Rama. Maral of Prague, people, you know, we know the Maral because of Hashkafa. Maral's Svarim are mainly on philosophy, mysticism, and Agadita. But the Maral was a great, great posek, a very authoritative posek in Halacha. And the Maral actually ridiculed this Chumrah. He says, where do you get this Chumrah that you can't eat matzah ashira on Pesach? And the Maral said, for sure you could. For sure you could. Nevertheless, the minhag of Ashkenazim, by and large, is to follow the Rama that we do not eat matzah ashira during Pesach at all. And not only do we not eat matzah ashira during Pesach, but we, if we treat it like chametz, we stop eating matzah. Now, this is an interesting thing. Let's take Erev Pesach for a moment. Erev Pesach has two different prohibitions that kick in at different times. There's a prohibition against eating chametz, and there's a prohibition against eating matzah. Now, let's think about this a little bit. A lot of people stop eating matzah really early. Some people stop from Purim, and some people stop Rosh Chodesh. But according to the halacha, you can eat matzah until Erev Pesach in the morning. Even Erev Pesach at night, you could have a matzah. But in the morning, you have to stop. And the Gemara gives an interesting, not the Gemara, it's the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi gives a very interesting analogy. Anyone that eats matzah on Erev Pesach is as if they had relations with their betrothed before the chuppah. Meaning to say, yeah, there'll be a time and a place, but you're jumping the gun. We want you to have a great desire for it. Now, look at this. So the Isser of matzah on Erev Pesach is actually earlier than the Isser of chametz on Erev Pesach. Matzah, I got to stop eating from Amud HaShachar, from dawn, Erev Pesach. Matzah, I can eat until, chametz, I can eat until whatever it is, 4 hours into the day, right? So it's interesting, matzah kicks in, the Isser of matzah kicks in earlier than the Isser of chametz. So the question becomes, when are you forbidden to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach? So it's interesting, because egg matzah is not matzah, because matzah has to be lechem oni, right? So according to Svardim, egg matzah is not matzah, and egg matzah is not chametz. You could eat egg matzah, according to Svardim, the whole day until the last 3 hours of the day when you're not supposed to ruin your appetite. According to Ashkenazim, the Isser of eating egg matzah will kick in when you're not allowed to eat chametz. So you could eat egg matzah, Amud HaShachar. If you're having an early breakfast, Erev Pesach, you can actually have egg matzah. In fact, that's interesting. When people make a siyum, if you're a your husband, your children are b'chor, right? So a b'chor is supposed to fast on Erev Pesach unless they go to a siyum or something, or they make a siyum. Make a siyum is even better. But the perennial question is, what do you serve? Because in order to be a valid siyum, it has to be hamotzi or mizonos. You can't just eat fruit or potato starch cake. It has to be something that is either bread, hamotzi, or mizonos. So what do you eat? So it's a perennial problem. Theoretically, early in the morning, you could have bread. But people are very, you know, scared to have bread. Erev Pesach, the crumbs, etc. Matzah, you can't have it all. But one of the best things to have is matzah ashira, because matzah ashira, even if there are crumbs, first of all, it's less crumbly than bread, and even if there are crumbs, it's only a chumrah of chametz, so I got to stop eating it, but if there's crumbs around, that's okay, because you're allowed to have matzah ashira in your house. You don't have to be concerned for matzah ashira crumbs. So matzah ashira would be a very good thing to make a siyum on. And as I say, you have to stop eating it when chametz kicks in, if you're Ashkenazi, But you don't have to worry about crumbs because matzah shira you're allowed to own, you're allowed to possess. Yeah.
What was the hitnagdut?
Oh, well, the hitnagdut was simply because he felt there was no source in the Gemara for it. Because if the Gemara says beferish that the chisaron of matzah ashira is not lechem oni, the implication of that is there is no problem the rest of Pesach. Yeah. Okay. And you're Ashkenazi.
And I'm Ashkenazi.
Okay.
Yeah. And
yeah. Right. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
He rescinded.
Well. It's interesting. I don't know if he was relying on the Maral, but the Maral said that. But as I say, we follow the Rama normally, you know, etc. Yeah.
What about matzah that has tzibin?
That is what?
Subin
like. Well, that's a totally different thing. I mean, matzah can be made from any of the five species of grain. Matzah can be whole wheat. Matzah can be regular wheat. Matzah can be oats. Matzah can be spelt. Matzah can be rye.
Can it be eaten then during Pesach, but not on the Seder?
Well, the truth is, even during the Seder. Meaning, now some people say we don't have a mesorah how to make matzah unless it. But me, according to the halacha, it's kosher even during the Seder. As long as it's shmura, as long as it was watched. Now, as they say, some people are machra. Some people do have a custom that they will only eat wheat matzah on Pesach because they say we have no direct tradition how long fermentation takes for other minim. But again, that is keneged the Gemara, keneged the Shulchan Aruch. You find this, soft matzah is another example. You know, many Sephardim have soft, bendable matzah. Yemenite Sephardim. It's very, very clear that was the matzah that Hillel used, right? Hillel invented shawarma, the first shawarma. You have lamb and vegetables, maror, you know, in a pita, in a Pesach Dika pita. Because, as you know, when we try to make our korech sandwiches, you know, they're not really, you know, it kind of falls apart. Hillel clearly used bendable matzah, like Taimonim and many Sephardim do. So Ashkenazim want to do it too. Like, why shouldn't Ashkenazim have this nice product? But some Rabbanim are very, very machmir. They say there's a Masorah, there's a tradition, and we are not allowed to deviate. So that you have to ask your individual Rav. But according to the halacha, soft matzah is not matzah ashira. Remember, matzah ashira has a very precise definition. It's only if you added egg yolk, chocolate. If you have flour and water, but it's soft, or whole wheat, or it's rye, or it's oat, etc., it's perfectly kosher. That's still called lechem oni. Yeah.
Do you have a proof that the other besides wheat don't need less or more time than 18 minutes?
There's no proof connected. There's no proof connected. I mean, Chazal, when Chazal
comes in.
Say again.
That's where Masoret comes in.
Yeah. But so some, yeah. No. No. Of course. Yeah, for sure.
But the rest of the
Nigerians, they could have matzah shira, yeah. I don't know if they do, but they could. Maybe they don't, but the rest of Pesach, they eat matzah shira. Yeah. Now, let me mention that. I'm sorry.
So if we're talking about Masorah, and obviously, like you're saying, or Hillel started out with what we know today as a wafah kind of.
Right. So it came, you know, this is a whole interesting analysis of the history of Ashkenazic halacha. I'm going to simplify. This is not totally true. But the tendency has been in all laws connected to kashrus that Ashkenazim over the centuries have become progressively much, much more stricter in many, many areas. And part of it was a result of the Crusades where the Ashkenazic Rabbanim died and were killed, and there was a sense that we don't know the halakha so well, we have to err on the side of strictness. You constantly find in the Ashkenazi poskim the notion, ein anu bikiyim. We are not baki, we are not familiar, we have to be strict. And a part of it, again, came from the fact that so many great rabbanim and yeshivos were decimated during the Middle Ages in many, many massacres, and the Ashkenazic poskim became very, very strict. And part of it is this. Why is our matzah burnt to a crisp? By the way, and if you get a brisk, if you go to brisk, you'll actually have black matzah like charcoal. Is because we know that flour and water ferment until it's baked. So we want to be sure it's baked, right? So we bake it to a crisp. So that's why it has to be so crispy and so black and so dark. And that's why we don't allow soft matzah, because soft matzah has a greater potential for there to be chimatz. So it's really connected to the notion of Ashkenazim just being extra strict, even when halacha did not require it. And this bichlal was the mesira of Ashkenaz. But nevertheless, if you have, well, again, you have to ask your rabbi. I don't want to give you a psak on this. According to the halacha, soft matzah is kosher lePesach, and even kosher for the Seder, but as they say, there is an inyan of mesira that some poskim are concerned about. Yeah. So this is what I said before. So this would depend. You would make hamotzi on matzah ashira if you're using it as your bread substitute in the meal. So if Erev Pesach in the morning, you're making a siyam and you're having a sudas mitzvah, you would make hamotzi on egg matzah. Otherwise, you would treat it like a piece of cake, which is also a shayla at some point. Now, let me mention that, it's interesting that if you remember the old matzah companies in the United States, I don't know if they're still there, I guess Manischewitz is probably still there, and Horowitz Margareten is not there anymore. Streitz is a little different. So it's interesting that when they make a whole line of egg matzah, chocolate-covered matzah, egg matzah, apple juice matzah, whatever it is, and they put in Hebrew, ayin, they put many years, ayin shulchan aruch beramah tuf ayin beis, Hebrew letters, which basically says, don't eat this product. But they don't want to put don't eat this product, because then people aren't going to eat it. So instead they put Hebrew letters, which is a reference to the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, which most people, if they're not learned, think it's another heksher, just like in Eretz Yisrael, right? You take a product, it must be good. It has 10 hashgachos on it. Right? So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, who was the Rav HaMachshir of Streitz, which I think also closed down recently on the Lower East Side, he insisted that they put in English on the Streitz egg matzah, this product should only be eaten by children, by the elderly, and the sick, and the ill, and cannot be used for the Seder. No reference to the Shulchan Aruch in Hebrew, but it be put directly now. Now, whether people listen to that or not, that's their own decision. That he can't monitor. But at least it had to be in English so people understood. That could be. That could be. Fewer people bought the egg matzah. That's right. So this is a big difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So there are actually two major differences, right? Kitnios, which I'm not going to talk a lot about, which refers to rice and corn and legumes and the Bedatz in Yerushalayim. There are two shitas about kitnios. Ashkenazim cannot eat kitnios, that's for sure. But the question becomes, do we expand kitnios beyond the original parameters as new types of products are discovered? Quinoa is a good example. Quinoa, pronounced quinoa. Now, quinoa, that's okay. Quinoa is the, I guess, how we pronounce it in English. So the Bedatz, the Eidech Haredes, kind of takes the position that even a non-chametz grain that could be ground up into flour resembles chametz grains, and therefore it is included in kitnios. Kitnios keeps on expanding. On the other hand, the OU and many kashrus organizations in the States say that no, kitnios should be limited to the very specific things, and we don't expand it. So that's why quinoa would be acceptable under many American hashgachos in Eretz Yisrael, it's a bit of a question. The only question with this is, if you think about it, a lot of things that are very mekubal as being prohibited as kitnios are really relatively newly discovered things. Corn, right? Everyone who keeps kitnios does not eat corn on Pesach. And yet, corn is a native North American, so corn was not even discovered.
Peanuts.
Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that in Russia as a child, he and everybody used to eat peanuts during Pesach. Not peanut oil, that's another issue. I'm talking about mamash peanuts. He says it was never mekubal that peanuts were kidneys. And yet, today it's pretty much the case. So kidneys is a perplexing halacha because sometimes it expands and sometimes it contracts. And then we have issues, do you apply it to the oil of kidneys or only to the kidneys itself? That's why it used to be, I remember as a child, that peanut oil was the standard oil that was used for Pesach. Today it is not. Today it would be cottonseed oil or grapeseed oil, and even cottonseed oil, there are problems, right? So kidneys, as I say, has its periods of growth and its periods of contraction. Svardim live life in a simpler way. We always say, we always balance, you know, a person decides, a bal tshuva, you know, and certainly a ger, can decide to be Ashkenazi or Svardi. He can decide. So you got to make a list. Okay. Svardi, get to eat rice and corn on Pesach, but I got to get up Amud HaShachar for Slichos for a whole month, you know. You got to figure out what's worth it. Two wives, I don't know which way that goes, but okay. And the like. But it is true that even a Baal Tshuva, this is, people don't always know this. If I'm a Baal Tshuva, and even if my parents came from Poland or Lithuania, once they broke the Mesorah, I do have the freedom. I'm not bound by my grandparents, minhagim, if I did not receive them from my father. So a Baal Tshuva also has freedom to make a decision. And it's important to know that you're not bound by kind of accidental choices. I mean, let's say, for example, a guy or a woman became from through Chabad. That doesn't mean like the first person who made them from, you know, that's going to be their minhagim for life. It's understood that nothing wrong with Chabad, I don't mean to say anything negative about that either, but it's, or Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Yeshiva, whatever it is, a person is given a certain amount of time to figure out what Eidah they want to be connected to, but at some point they do have to make a decision. At some point they should be connected to an Eidah's basic minhagim, but it's not like the accident of the one that was makariv you somehow is koveh for the rest of your life what you have to follow. Now, I saw Rav Bleich, I don't have a raya, but I just don't feel it's correct. Rav Bleich, who is a very, very chashuva, great posek in New York and YU, he actually says that a ger can pick and choose. A ger can choose Ashkenazi, Sephardi. A ger can make any mixture he wants. That's not mistavra to me. I had never heard of this concept that you just choose. Like, he can have kidneys and he can daven Ashkenaz. You know, he could mix and match any possible combination. I think that's not the normal Havana. The normal Havana is that you can choose which Eidah you want to be a part of, but then you're part of that Eidah. You know, you don't it's not like a Chinese menu of picking and choosing. Yeah, I'm sorry. So generally speaking, you follow your husband's minhag, but your husband can give you rishus to let you follow your own. Now, when it comes to food choices, it's probably good for husband and wife to be on the same page. But a good example would be davening, nusach hatfila. Let's say a woman was raised davening nusach sfarad, the husband is Ashkenaz, although technically the woman would go over to the husband, but the husband can say, you know, keep your nusach, you're comfortable in it, you're used to it. That does not impact on the running of the house. So in such a case, we would allow a difference in minhagim. But in eating, that would be a more of an awkward type of situation. Yeah. Yeah. So I think there may be a problem a little bit, because the problem is this. It's true that if you get quinoa with a Sephardic hashgacha, you can assume there's no chametz in there. But you can't assume there might not be some rice in there, because the Sephardim don't care if there's rice in there. So consequently, I think it would be difficult to be somech on an ochle kitnios hashgacha, simply because as an Ashkenazi, you also have to be careful that there's no kitters. Now, I was talking to somebody about this, and he gave me a good svara. He actually told me, and it actually may make sense, that, you know, chametz and kitnios are not the same in their severity. Chametz is not nullified in 60. Kitnios is. So as a result, he said, even if there's a little chashash that there's kitnios, it's surely, unless it says quinoa rice or something, it surely will be nullified in 60. So that may be logical. I think it's better to try to avoid it. So if you can get an American certified Ashkenazi quinoa or whatever it is, maybe someone in Israel does it too, that would be the best thing, because that way you don't have a problem of taruvot, kitniot, and the like. Now, there is a fellow, an interesting Rav in Shiloh. I'm sorry, not in Shiloh, but it's called Machon Shiloh is his institution. Rav David Bar Chaim. Interesting, very interesting guy. He has all sorts of different shitas, but he's a religious person, but a little avant-garde. He takes the position that once the Jews are back in Eretz Yisrael, they're not bound at all by the takana of the Gaonim of Kitnios. That was a Chutz La'aretz takana, and it should not bind Jews in Eretz Yisrael at all. So he says even Ashkenazim should eat kitnios, but as I say, maybe I shouldn't even mention him, he is not, although he is a Talmud Chacham, but his position has not been accepted by any Ashkenazi posek. But you should be grateful for little things, because little blessings. Rabbi Kiveger, around 250 years ago, discussed the possibility that maybe potatoes ought to be included in kitnios, because potatoes are also ground into flour, right? Potato starch, right, et cetera. Now, today it wouldn't have been as catastrophic, maybe. But if you think about what Pesach foods used to be before there were all these manufactured stuff, and even today many people don't use manufactured stuff for Pesach, life was potatoes. I mean, think about the Irish potato famine, you know, in the 1830s. When the potatoes failed, there was mass starvation. Well, that was for a whole year in Ireland. But for Pesach, to take away potatoes, that would have been mamash unthinkable. So Baruch Hashem, the poskim did rule that potatoes are not considered to be kitnios. That's correct. Huh? They wouldn't have anything at all. That's right. No kidneys, no gebras, no potatoes. So at some point, halacha recognized that, as you say, this is a gezeira, she'ein rov hatzibor yecholin lamod ba, and therefore they did not extend it. So kidneys is an interesting issue. You know, somebody told me a story, not that I'm advocating going to movie theaters, that they went to a movie theater when they first made Aliyah during Chol HaMoed, and they saw somebody, some kid selling popcorn. And he said, oh, I come to a Jewish country, and during Pesach, you know, they sell popcorn. Oh, now I understand what all the anti-Zionists say. But then he overheard that when somebody came to buy a bag of popcorn, the kid asked him, Atos Svardi o Ashkenazi? So he said, Baruch Hashem, even the kid who sells popcorn is not going to sell kitnios to an Ashkenazi, right? So, mi ka'amcha Yisrael, right? So, forget, you have to judge people as chus in these types of situations. So now, let me tell you an interesting chiddush of the Maharal of Prague. Now, remember, The Maharal of Prague, this is not Nogea Lemaisa, because the Maharal of Prague totally disagreed with the Rama, right? The Maharal of Prague took the position, you can eat Egg Matzah during Pesach, but you can't use it during the Seder. But now I'm going to tell you a fascinating analytical chiddush of the Maharal, although it's not halacha at all. He says like this. He says, let's say a person comes to Leil Seder, and he doesn't have any matzah except matzah ashira. So the Maharal says he should still eat it at the Seder. And this is the reason. Matzah at the Seder has two different reasons. One is lechem oni, and the other is there was no time for our forefathers' dough to rise. Egg matzah fails one of those meanings of matzah. It's not oni, it's not connected to slavery or persecution. It is rich and fancy, but it still reminds you that the dough didn't rise. So says the Maharal, even if your matzah is not a kiyum of one of the meanings of lechem, of matzah, it is still a fulfillment of the other meaning, and therefore it would be proper to eat egg matzah at the Seder if you had no other alternative. Now that's a fascinating analytical chiddush, but I want to emphasize, obviously, we can't follow that because the Maharal was proceeding based on his shita, you're allowed to eat egg matzah during Pesach. So then he says, b'di'eved, you can use it at the Seder as well, without a bracha. But according to the Ramah, since we're not allowed to eat matzah shira bichlal, then obviously we couldn't use it at the Seder. Yes. Well, that's very true. But let me remind you that Sfardim, the whole year, make mizonos on regular matzah, but on Leil Pesach, that is the lechem. So that becomes the special lechem. The occasion of mitzvah makes it lechem at that point. But again, that's not our subject because that matzah is not matzah ashira. That is lechem oni. Right? So this is an interesting chiddush of the Maharal. Again, it is not nogea lahalacha lemaisa because of the Ashkenazi custom not to eat matzah ashira, but the Maharal l'shitaso, who permits eating matzah ashira, says b'di'eved you can be yotzei one inyan of matzah even b'leil haseder hagam that you would not make a bracha on it. Anyway, I wish you a good and a chag kasher v'sameach, a wonderful yom tov, and be well.